Hi, my name is Erica. I am 25. Today is Sunday, August 14th, 2022. We are in Boise, Idaho, and I am with my dad, Greg.
My name is Greg Watkins. I'm 59 years old. Today is August 14th, 2022. We're in Boise, Idaho, and I'm here with my daughter, Erica.
So how did we get here?
So do we just jump back to the past?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are here with the purpose of discussing our move to Idaho.
Right.
So I think we should just take it right back.
Right. So, as you know, I was born in Chicago, and I was the second of four kids, an older brother, two younger sisters. My dad was a doctor who went to medical school in Chicago. Mom, your grandma, had gone to nursing school, but then was when she started a family, didn't do that anymore. And so we're living in Chicago. I always blank on the name of the neighborhood. I'll remember it in a second. But only till the age of four. So I lived in Chicago till the age of four when we decided to move to Idaho. And as you know, I haven't really talked to my parents in great detail about this, but there was a lot of conflict in Chicago at the time. This is the late 60s. And so civil rights struggles, racial tension in Chicago, big city life. Grandma had grown up in Chicago, so she was a city girl, but Papa grew up in a tiny town in Illinois where there was a grain elevator, and his family worked loading grain into the trains and stuff. And so it was a town of maybe 200 or 300. So Dad had known the countryside. And then he finished his training to be a urologist, and so he needed to find a urology position. I don't know how one did that in the late 60s, but Idaho popped up. In Nampa, Idaho, there was a single urologist. He was approaching retirement, and so they decided to come out here. So I think it was partly to leave Chicago and, like, the tensions of urban life, and especially in Chicago at that time, and come to Nampa. And that's one of my earliest memories, is going to the house of Dr. Rosamondo, who lived, you know how 12th Avenue goes out towards the Owyhees?
Yeah.
So there's like a big hill, and just before it drops down in the Owyhees, he lived on right near 12th Avenue up there. And being in his yard where he had lots of lava rocks and like lizards, you know, seeing my first lizard on a lava rock. And so then they moved downtown Nampa, 411 13th Street, I think. Mm-hmm. You've seen the house. So a fair number of memories from that. But then moved to the house on Rose Hill Terrace outside of city limits. And so grew up there. So grew up in Nampa and had a small farm town life, but you know, with Dad as a doctor, that's kind of all my classmates are like mostly in farming families of some sort or another. Mm-hmm. And then somehow, basically, I think thanks to testing, standardized testing, did well on those, you know, was basically an A student. And so it's funny how little coincidences shape your life. But I'd done well enough on the PSAT that Stanford sent information. So they're like I can't imagine they do anything like this anymore, but they were kind of just recruiting. So I just get it in the mail. It's like, I've never heard of Stanford University. I'm not sure my parents had either. Most kids who were going to go to college, if they were going to go to college at all, it would be University of Idaho or Idaho State or something. But because of this testing, I was starting to learn about different schools. So, you know, no pressure at all from my parents, no culture of like trying to get into good schools and all of that. So, So I applied to Stanford, and I think it has a lot to do with being from Idaho. I was just one of maybe, we were talking about this morning, maybe two people who got into Stanford that year. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I left the age of 18 to go to Stanford. And then, as you know, I was trying to think this morning, like, if I ever thought about coming to Idaho, but I don't think I ever thought about where I was headed more than just a couple years out.
Yeah.
And so ended up being, I remember when I turned 36 or whatever, I was like, oh, so now I've been outside of Idaho more than I was inside Idaho.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so, as you know, mom and I just moved back this summer. So at the age of 59, I'm coming back.
Although you skipped over I guess this is the point of the story, but many years of a lovely, vibrant life teaching at Stanford and living in the Stanford dorms.
No, right.
So I have some questions. Do you remember how you felt when you were leaving Idaho to go to California?
I think I felt ready for something new. I realized at one point teaching Stanford freshmen for many years, when I started realizing that the young people I was teaching are very different 18-year-olds than when I came to Stanford, mm-hmm. meaning all of us, that we didn't have the shared culture that people have now because of online life and just knowing so much about the world. Mm-hmm. Everybody shares in the same media, no matter if you're in a town of 20,000 or a town of 20 million.
Yeah.
So I didn't kind of know what to expect even.
Yeah.
I was just ready. One of my early experiences at Stanford was called kind of, I guess my Idaho identity got pulled forward. You probably heard me tell the story about calculus the first couple weeks of calculus class. So it's like a big class for maybe 100 freshmen. The professor does a problem on the chalkboard and he gets the wrong answer. And he's like, something went wrong here. What went wrong? And I saw what went wrong. And I raised my hand and I said, you just took the wrong square root. So everybody laughed. I was like, oh, crap, did I get it wrong? And my friend was saying, he just said root. So I started realizing, I have different ways. I say creek and roof. Yeah. And then my friends were very quickly trying to get me to stop wearing the jeans I was wearing. Because they're called hash jeans. And so they, kind of flared. Mm-hmm. And they had, a big pocket for a big comb. And
sounds cool. Should have kept them.
Right? They come back. Everything comes back. And then they were just endlessly fascinated with you've been in the woods and you go bear hunting. And so I'd love to tell those stories just because they get a kick out of them. But
yeah,
so I became the Idaho kid.
Yeah.
In one sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I had on my list when I think probably your description of Idaho was evolved, especially as our country has evolved and become more divided in ways.
Right.
But how do you describe Idaho to other people in your life?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a few things there. So when I was in college, so I was fresh from Idaho, learning about the rest of the world, seeing how people see me. One kind of dissonance was I was like a doctor's kid. Mm-hmm. And I was also asthmatic, had a big impact on me. So I was, I hunted, but my older brother hunted a lot more. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite feel comfortable in nature. It was a little scary. Mm-hmm. So in a weird way, they'd see me as an Idaho person in a way that I wasn't really. Mm. So I became aware of that disjuncture. And then I also, it was only when leaving Idaho that I started to become more aware of the political views of the people I had grown up around.
Yeah.
So a guy at, an you know, an older person, my dad's age, at some event, I was at some lunch or something. It was, you know, I was going to Stanford. It's like, oh, my son's going to Stanford. And he like pulls me aside and he's like, so, you know, when you get down there, they're going to teach you a lot of crazy stuff.
Oh, God.
And so, you know, if you ever start to question your views, he wanted me to call him.
Wow.
And so it was about, you know, it's about freedom and free markets and choice and all that kind of stuff. So, which I was kind of, was my basic political outlook, was like freedom's important and you should protect it and stuff. So that just felt weird. And then I started to understand as time went on what that was about.
Yeah.
And then there's just the racial thing too. You know, I'm suddenly at Stanford, very diverse environments.
Yeah,
I think it's wonderful. It just hits me as something, you know, it's unusual, but this is cool.
Yeah.
But then as I travel back for vacations and stuff, I start to realize there's people in my home community who are straight up racist, but you kind of don't know it as you're growing up because it's such a white environment.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of that racial view isn't expressed.
Yeah.
And so that started me thinking a little bit differently about where I'd come from.
Mm-hmm.
Am I answering the question you asked?
I think, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think at least what I'm interacting with in my life now is people's perceptions of Idaho versus the reality of Idaho.
Uh-huh.
And maybe those things have you saying people were amazed by your access to nature or farm life. And now I think it's more people being how could you live in such a politically wackadoodle place when really there is a lot of good happening in Idaho in terms of activist movements. And I appreciate that there's less income inequality, it feels, in Boise.
Right.
And more in common than we think in Idaho in terms of protecting nature and trying to justify to, because I grew up in California, justify to people why Idaho is actually this amazing place that has a lot to offer. It feels like those two things are kind of reversed.
Right. Well, so I think we should try to get a little bit of your story too then. So
okay.
That people know more about how you, so everybody knows you grew up in California, but so how do you find yourself back living in Idaho?
Well, I mean, having a dad that's from Idaho means that we spent many Christmases here, as well as times in the summer, just being with, I think to me, Idaho represented family. There wasn't much more behind my thoughts about Idaho other than I have this incredible family that I love to spend time with in this place.
I have to say it's amazing the relationship you have with your cousins.
Yeah. So we have nine cousins, correct? In our OG cousin, the original cousin group.
Right.
And it's really unique and special that we are all so close and also each kind of have our buddy that is the same age as us.
Right.
And holidays just felt so magical. And
you have a grandmother who was put her whole body and soul into those events.
Right. It's amazing how much effort is unnoticed when magic is created and becoming an adult, you realize that grandma had to really make conscious decisions about getting everyone to come together and making sure people show up. And I think in terms of looking forward, it's hard to imagine how someone could create that.
Yeah.
And so thank you, grandma, for that. I think it's had an impact on everyone's lives in ways that they probably just couldn't even describe.
Right.
And so for me, Idaho represented this connection to family. And then there was also just it's beautiful and we get to do fun things, but that was kind of the background of it. And I think also my aunt, your sister, and my uncle created a wonderful coffee shop called Flying M that is in Idaho a safe space for people who are queer and racially diverse and like more at risk in terms or like more unsafe in other parts of Idaho.
Yeah.
And so Flying M is kind of like this haven of protection and awesome progressive ideals. And so I also didn't realize how politically, I don't know, strained
right.
Idaho is because
that was more,
cause I only experienced like the Flying M community.
Right. Yeah.
So I didn't have the same like opinions about that other people had that they show in the news about Idaho.
Yeah.
And so that was like my idea of Idaho. And then I left California for college and moved to Missouri. And I was stunned by, it was also 2016, which was a hard year for America. And, I was like, just kind of like, I was brutally awakened to the realities of like racial disparity in the States because I didn't experience that in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and at Missouri at this time was when the football players
went on strike. First football team to ever go on strike. Yeah. And then also like Ferguson was the start of Black Lives Matter. So there was like kind of the like first Black Lives Matter protests in Missouri. And also a grad student went on hunger strike, which was like national news.
Because of concerns about racial disparities at the university.
Yeah. It was a Black Lives Matter protest. So I was not wanting to live in Missouri anymore. And so I dropped out of college and went to go travel, but I knew I needed to make money before I traveled. So I moved in with Lisa and Kevin, my aunt and uncle, and got to work at the Flying M to save money.
Right.
I can't really remember how I felt about Idaho then. I think I wasn't as in love with it, but I was also living in Nampa and I was living with my aunt and uncle. And I think I liked the release from the pressures that the Bay Area had about success and like, and wealth and,
And you already knew you wanted to travel, right?
So I knew,
you saw this as a stopping point in order to do something else.
Right. So I wasn't thinking about living here.
Yeah.
And then I traveled, which was wonderful. And there was a period of traveling where I moved back to Idaho thinking that I would potentially go back to school. And it was called Snowmageddon. It was like the worst winter ever. And I was just like, oh, how could I possibly live in this place where I can't leave my house? And so then I left again and
to travel
again. Yeah. And then I was living abroad and feeling like deep longing for community. And I think like of the places I've been, Idaho feels the most true to the kind of community I want. People are like so attentive to each other. People are so willing to spend just quality time with each other. People prioritize like spending time in nature. Like the community aspect of Idaho just is like unmatched, at least for me.
Right.
And so I did feel called to come back to Idaho in that sense. And also it was the start of COVID. Which made you feel more like I need to be around the people I care about the most because who knows what's going to happen.
Right.
And so once COVID hit, I was living in Palo Alto with you guys at Stanford and working on a farm and realizing I wanted to do like regenerative ag. And then just thought like maybe now's the time to move to Idaho and got a job with AmeriCorps through the city of Boise teaching at Boise Urban Garden School. And then moved here and fell deeply in love.
I don't know why. When I hear you tell the story, it seems like I should have known better. But when you said you feel like this is a place you could put down roots, or just it surprised me. Mm. So maybe it's because you've been world traveling so much. It was just such a shift of gears. But
yeah.
But it was, it was exciting to hear that you thought Idaho could be a place where you stay.
Yeah, I do think it's surprising, but I also think, like, I am so glad to have traveled, because I do think community is the most important thing to me in my life, and I didn't have that for like 4 years,
right?
4 or 5 years, which felt really lonely.
Right. Well, you had a different kind of community, but you made lots of friends on the road, but it was just too unstable.
Yeah, and like lots of turnover, and I think like community also comes with purpose. Like, you find your people because you like to bike ride and you like to go to the river and you participate in conservation efforts or whatever. And so without purpose, like, travel's awesome, but it's not necessarily a direction of purpose. So you're also having a community based around like going to see tourist sites or something. And then that goes away. And what is the community?
Right. Well, so one thing I wanted to say earlier, so this is maybe shifting gears a little bit, but now that we have your trajectory, you were talking about how people think about Idaho versus your experience of Idaho. Mm-hmm. And so one way I have of thinking about what's happening in Idaho culturally is I think it's the, let's see, how do I put this? So I know Idaho, all I know is Idaho, and I go out to the world and to Stanford and meet all these different people. And so there's a sense of the bigger community of the United States and the world. And then, you know, just this idea of globalism, like, you know, and so I think one thing that happened culturally lately is that you can't keep the rest of the world out. So like when I was growing up, and I think people come to Idaho for various reasons. I talked about even my parents leaving Chicago because of stuff that's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just at a point culturally where you can't say, I don't want to know what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
Like, leave me alone. I have this way of doing things. I have this community. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just become very hard for us as a culture generally to sort out local from what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
And that the world's just on our doorstep for better or worse, but by necessity.
Yeah.
And we got to learn to figure that out.
Yeah. It is interesting. I think that's a really good point, because I think we all feel afraid, and there's like fear about what's coming in the future. And there's just like these kind of two ways of navigating that, of blame and hate. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, how do we move forward then there's also how can we get together and fix these problems that we have? And it is like, it is sad to see how much fear is in these people who are like expressing that through hate.
So it is
interesting to like find some compassion for people. Mm-hmm.
So one way I have of thinking about you, what you described as the dynamic of coming back to Idaho and how people perceive it from the outside, is that you feel like it is a place where the local can meet the global, and it needs to be sorted out.
Yeah.
Like you're up for that.
You want to
figure that out. And so outsiders maybe don't appreciate that that's getting worked out.
Yeah.
So from the outside, they imagine that it's still this insular, isolated thing, although some people want it to be that.
Yeah. Which is kind of backwards of people to be like, oh, it's so insular and, you know, nobody's educated there and blah, blah, blah. Like kind of granting wishes for people about like how they are perceived when really we have like a very diverse population. We have many different kinds of people here. Right. We have lots of access to nature that we need to protect. Like there are so many things happening here that are happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things I've noticed in coming back, so I have this tricky little dance with people where I grew up in Nampa, you know, so I have this connection to Idaho, but then there's so much influx of people and the Californians are coming and, and one thing I often run, if I say that I'm coming from California, and it's almost kind of cute the way they say it, but they're not, you know, because there could be a more hateful way to think about the resistance to people coming here.
But
usually the friendly way is they'll say, oh, you had to get out of there.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
So it's like it's chumming up to me, but saying, oh, I understand. Yeah. The crazy.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But even in a, it's crazy out there. Like, I understand you want to come here because it's simpler and it's, so it's all good things. And I understand that you want that good thing too. So I kind of never know how to react to that.
I know. It's so hard.
Yeah. I was going to say another thing. Oh, well, and so then, you know, coming back, we're part of this wave of people, a wave that's like, causing a lot of change here that is disruptive to people's lives. I totally understand how people have been here a long time, hate the traffic, hate all the houses popping up, hate the everything getting more expensive.
Yeah.
And so I think I've described to you before, I do feel like people, like that is a problem to solve.
Yeah.
And so my personal feeling about it is that's the world coming to your doorstep.
Like,
What is causing those people to come here? How does the economy work?
Yeah.
How does it fit in with what's happening globally?
Yeah.
And so they I don't think people are enough thinking about those forces.
Yeah.
They're just like, can't we just keep it the way it's been?
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, it is funny that people will say like, oh, it's you had to get out of there. There's so much crazy. And you can be like, yeah, it's so crazy how climate change affects the Bay Area. Or like, because I mean that, there are reasons why people are moving that are obviously not because of politics. They're also because of, you know, I mean, I remember when we were in the Bay Area and the whole sky was orange because of the fires. And you're like, oh, can I really? Right. I mean, we have bad fires in Idaho and the smoke can get really bad. But that was particularly scary.
Right.
And you know you're going to have to move out of the Bay Area because of climate change at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is funny that they don't think that there could be other reasons that people are leaving.
Yeah, and then one specific thing for me is also just like understanding how capitalism works.
Yeah.
Like what's happening is that money is flowing from, say, you know, tech-heavy Bay Area, and that money is coming to Idaho because of the prices here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, hey, that, you know, our economy is working that way.
Yeah.
Do you not want it to work that way? Should
Let's
we control it more?
Be socialists.
We don't have to go that far, but you can just raise somebody's awareness of like, oh, there's a something that's true of our society, that capitalism gets a kind of free rein sometimes.
Yeah.
Might be the thing that's causing the headaches for my life in Idaho. And so can I think critically about, well, how is real estate money working?
Yeah.
And should we be doing more to slow that down or control the? And I think, you know, you said socialist, but I think just, you know, people are so allergic to any amount of control.
Yeah.
But of course we control things all the time.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, here comes all this, with this wave of money from California.
Yeah.
Let's be smart about what's happening and how can we impact it? And
Yeah. I think, like, I'm going to bring it back down to us in terms of what we can control and our move to Idaho and thinking critically about how we want our lives to look.
Right.
I'm curious what you hope for your future in Idaho and what you hope for our future in Idaho as a family.
As a family, right. Yeah, well, I mean, I hope that, I mean, one obvious hope is just that we have richly integrated lives, mm-hmm. and we're just getting started mm-hmm. at it. You know, we, mom and dad just moved into a house a month ago. But here you are two doors down, just by chance, but that's awesome. You showed up this morning with a armful of laundry to do in our basement. And your sister now has just moved to Boise and is going to be a teacher at mm-hmm. a local school, but also just moved like
yeah.
2 weeks ago. She's still doing getting stuff out of storage. She's not far away. She's coming over for dinner. So mm-hmm. I hope that's kind of just tightly mm-hmm. woven thing keeps happening. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's, you know, we're now so we didn't talk much about it, but having grown up in an apartment in a dorm. So like yeah. we lived surrounded by other people.
Yeah.
On a campus where it's very easy to do lots of parts of life, you know, with the gym and outside outdoor space and
yeah.
it's all right there. But now we're like there's public roads and we live in different houses and
yeah.
Everybody has a different schedule, and so I worry about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think we're gonna have to be more conscious about like taking time. I know you want to explore Idaho. I'd like to explore Idaho. Mom mm-hmm. would like to explore Idaho. So doing the vacation, more vacationing yeah. things.
Yeah.
And then for me, this is I think a wild hope, but to create that more dorm-like vibe somehow that we as a family could have an impact on other people by figuring out ways to have more communal things happening somehow.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that without having some kind of space somewhere where that happens. But mm-hmm. so I guess I'm saying that it's also how we connect with the community
yeah.
at large and whether. Like, I think that's something that we, as a team of four, your older sister, you, and me and mom, have an impact more generally by bringing that more people into something somehow. I don't know mm-hmm. what that is. But
yeah.
That's my hopes.
I hope that for us, too. I think I worry a little bit about the integrated lives in terms of I'm nervous that we'll integrate on more of an administrative level than on a spiritual or like personal level. Because when I would come to California, we have a little bit more of intentional time about like, oh, our daughters are here. Let's
right.
talk about what our future looks like. Or, I mean, I don't know if we ever really do that, but I like to do that.
Right.
I like to
yes,
think about things. And I feel like I've been, since everyone has moved here, more disconnected from like the emotional lives
right.
of the people I care about.
Yeah.
Because there's so much administrative stuff happening.
Yeah.
And I don't actually want to be part of like, yes, I want to help you pick weeds, but I have weeds of my own to pick. I want to connect. I want to connect.
Yeah.
And so I think that will be a hurdle for us.
Well, I'm glad you're worried about it because I think, and you're kind of, it's a bit your role in the family to worry about that. But also, I'd be a little patient because I think it's also just the heavy transition time.
Yeah.
Mom stopping her job and now I'm going to have a commute job and we have a new house. And,
yeah.
So there's tons of administrative stuff
yeah.
to get through.
My opposition to that is like, maybe that's the most important time to connect emotionally because we will get those things done. I think it was like a huge loss for me to not have the time to connect over our move from Stanford. Because there was so much administrative thing, there were so many administrative things to do,
uh-huh.
and that's something we'll never get back, and like we'll never get this time back, of moving and so prioritizing some connection uh-huh. that is not administrative. Which will bring me to my last question.
People listening to this can send some suggestions of things.
Yeah, send them in or come over to our street. So I brought this up at coffee this morning, but a question that I've been thinking about recently is if this is all there ever is, did that make sense?
If our current life is...
I think you can decide it for yourself.
Okay.
If this is all there ever is, will it be enough? Hmm. And I'm curious about the answer.
Yeah, and I think you're partly asking because I think we have, I think there's like a, you have part of your animating principle of your spirit is a slow down, take note of the moment kind of thing. And you get frustrated with your busy parents' lives. And that's an important thing to keep in balance. For me, the thing that I think maybe you don't appreciate enough about what animates me anyway, I think our lives are, this comes from existentialism. This is a philosophically backed proposition. the French existentialists talk about having projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, our lives are really made of projects.
Mm-hmm.
And projects are always forward looking. Like mm-hmm. you're moving towards something.
Yeah.
So I think the deepest version of, is this enough? Is kind of like a Zen Buddhist, can you be fully in the moment?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, that's way over at this end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also this really unsettled, always thinking about the future, on a wheel in a mouse cage, or whatever that's called, rat race kind of thing. But I think the place in the middle is like being clear about your projects and moving towards them.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, fundamentally, it's not, this is not enough unless you see the this
mm-hmm.
as having forward-looking things in them.
Yeah.
And that'll always, because they're forward-looking, they'll always not be what you thought they were going to be, or there'll be new circumstances that come along that you're mm-hmm. adapting to. And so for me, it is fundamentally always change.
Yeah.
And developments and trying to shape what's ahead.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question? And do you agree with that?
I think I agree. I think, I think this is going to be a big thing to say with 2 minutes.
Okay, you can do it.
But I think I often think about death. So I think if the more I think about it, the more my answer is yes, it's enough.
Ah, right.
It's like been wonderful. And that's a good feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm want to be conscious about continuing living my life so that I'm doing what I need to do in all my moments, and that I could be asked that question as we move
right.
on to different projects, and I can still say yes.
Right. Yep. So I have one final thought about that, I think. So a student once asked me if, there was a little phase where students really were about being happy. And I think mm-hmm. I get this insight from the philosopher Aristotle, but happiness they saw as a steady state thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can I be in this feeling of happiness in the moment?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started appreciating that happiness is partly about having these forward-looking things. Like
yeah.
you gotta, which might be stressful and
mm-hmm.
rough and painful and hard and, but it's that is part of happiness to be doing that. And I think you have, so as much as you just expressed about the moments,
mm-hmm.
you're full of projects.
Yes.
And so. Well, it's been wonderful.
Thank you.
To you.
For connecting with me.
You bet. Thanks to StoryCorps for helping us make it happen.